Maw once again to the world in episode 124. We're coming to you on this festive first day of December in the year of Luigi. And joining me this week we have Daniel.
You were supposed to word it in this, the year of Luigi.
It is this, the year of Luigi, but it's Luigi's year. It's time to shine. And we have Jason.
Howdy, folks.
So yes, this week has been extremely quiet with news, as far as I can tell. I guess you really are into a system malfunctioning at launch, and, you know, internet going up and down and stuff like that. There's really been nothing exciting or groundbreaking, which is what we expected, and we always kind of expect this time of the year. The next major thing will be the VGX next week, and we'll talk about that when that happens. So for this week, we're going to start our annual Game of the Year in Review segment, as we look at January through March of this year. But before we get there, I guess we'll catch up on what we've been playing recently in the past week. Anybody wants to go first?
I purchased a lot of Ace Attorney games on DS. And by a lot, I mean I bought every single one of them. And only two of them are here. Playing Ace Attorney Investigation right now, because it's the one that I've played the least. Other than that, I haven't been playing anything new. I'm trying to not buy games, because I've bought far too many this year, and I don't want to buy any more for a while, so...
I was about to say, let's jump back a second, because this was our Thanksgiving, which also means it was our Black Friday, and I'm curious, did any of you kind of go overboard with video game purchases? And it sounds like Jason did.
Well, I was better this year, but I made up for it with Blu-ray purchases. So.
Oh, don't even talk about it. I think I purchased a dozen Blu-rays this year.
Yeah.
I mean, part of them was to fill out my James Bond collection, which I have on DVD,
same.
But I don't have on Blu-ray.
I did go to Best Buy, and they had a bunch for $4, so I think I'm only missing one Bond movie in my collection now.
Yeah,
but,
$4 is too much, so I filled out. I was missing, I think, I have 13 of them on Blu-ray right now, so I was missing 10, and I got 8 of them. They didn't have A View to a Kill, and The Living Daylights on Blu-ray for $4. I haven't got those yet.
I think The Living Daylights is the one I'm missing, too. But, I mean, as far as game sales, I've been cherry-picking some stuff off Steam, who are also running their autumn sale right now. But other than that, I didn't really... I think it's because there's just fewer games this year that I want and or that I missed. So I found the selections were a lot slimmer. The only things I've been really been tempted by were Batman Arkham Origins and Grand Theft Auto 5. But I'm already playing GTA 5 from Gamefly, which I'll get into later. And other than that, there wasn't too much. Last year, I remember there was a bunch of games for like $15, and I just went hog wild.
Yeah, I was a bit impulsive with that on my purchases. I could have gotten cheaper, and I felt really bad. And other sites just make it really difficult to cancel your orders, which kind of makes sense at this time of the year, because you don't want people canceling and reordering stuff. So I ended up picking up an American version of Xenoblade Chronicles for $40 at GameStop. I got the app, like I promised, because certain people won't let me flip that down. I finally got PlayStation All-Stars Battle Royale for $10. And I want to say there was one or two other... Oh, I got Zombie U. That was $15. And then the rest of it was just really, really tempting me to buy stuff that I didn't want to buy, but I need... Like, they had Lego Marvel for $25, but I missed that on that. I missed that on Sonic and All-Stars.
Yeah, I was thinking of getting that for PS4 for, like, $30.
Yeah, I missed out on that. They had Sonic and All-Stars Transformed for $12.50, but it was only the Xbox version. I wanted to get the Wii U version for that. I think those were my major game purchases this year. It's sad that I kind of have to remember what I bought. Steam doesn't have a Black Friday sale. Did any of you do any of like the PSN or Xbox Live deals?
Well, they do the autumn sale. Is this week?
Oh, okay. And we still have Cyber
Monday. I got Shadowrun Returns yesterday. I got Game Dev Tycoon. I got another game that I'm not remembering. And then I almost bought a bunch of extra stuff for just catalog that I decided not to. And I was going to get Total War Rome 2 for $30 to kind of scratch my Rise itch, but I don't really have time to play that. It'll probably be back for the winter sale.
Yeah. Speaking of Steam and PC sales, we also have a couple of games that we kind of either picked up through Humble Bundles or pre-ordered that we plan on giving out on the site or on our Twitter feed sometime during throughout the course of this month. Like, I know we have, like, Arkham City and Arkham... Arkham City and Arkham Asylum. I can never get those three right in my head. Game of the Year editions to give it on PC and some, I think, Mortal Kombat Collection. So, hopefully details on that comes later on. I just know that a lot of us have ended up with a lot of excess games from either the Humble Bundle or Steam sales, or sometimes just buying games you didn't know you already owned on your PC, so you got it anyhow, because it was very cheap, and that's the problem with the Steam sale. Anyhow, yeah, that's that. So, yeah, we'll have a lot of new games to talk about next week. I'm really curious to get my teeth into The Last of Us to finally shit chase enough about that.
Who knows? You might enjoy it.
I'm not going in here expecting that I won't enjoy it. I think I'm going in expecting that I won't think it's as amazing as everybody tells me it is.
I didn't think it was amazing as everybody else says it was, so I would know how you would feel if you were to come out feeling like that.
Yeah.
I was more disappointed by the ending than anything else.
Well, I see if we get that far. I'm sure. I mean, it's like 20 hours, so it's going to take me a while. Speaking of endings, I did beat Mario 3D World. And I mean, there's really no way to beat around the bush here. It's currently my Game of the Year contender. I mean, not my Game of the Year contender. It is my current Game of the Year, and I don't really see much change in that in the next month. Who knows? The Last of Us is coming in the pipes, and I need to finish Tomb Raider and stuff like that. But it is what you expect from a Mario game from EAD Tokyo. I mean, they are top of their cast. To me, they are a perfect 5 for 5 as far as releases go. Yes, granted, 4 of those games have been Mario titles, but they have done a tremendous job with them, and it even once you beat the game, and this has kind of always been an iffy point with me, especially with the Galaxy games, is it opens up a lot of content after you beat the game, but I feel like it's kind of cheap to hide that away, because some of it is usually the best content in the game.
Yeah, especially the levels where they only give you 30 seconds.
Yeah.
It's like, crap, oh god, I gotta go.
Yeah, and they do that. I won't ruin too much because I do think it's something people need to experience and find out for themselves. But they do. I mentioned this on Twitter. I think this game is a huge step added to the franchise and to the characters and to their work with the characters, because there's a lot of callbacks and throwbacks to the Galaxy games and 3D and older Mario games. The year of Luigi. It's also a ton of callbacks to that. I mean, one of the secrets that they tell you, and Nintendo ruined this, I'll share this as well, is there's a game called Luigi Bros. In this, which is a reskin of the original Mario Bros. Game with Luigi and a second Luigi as playable characters. I mean, granted, that's also a game they go out for free all the time, but it is cool that you get that. There's also like 8-bit Luigi's hidden all over the game. Some obscure ones, some really great ones if you look for it. Stuff like that. Fantastic music all around. I've mentioned this before. I think last week's show ended with music from this, the game, and probably be this week's. And then they go back and they remix it. And then there's this one surprise that I really don't want to ruin. It's a minor thing, but it was so fantastic when it happened. And I was just like grinning from ear to ear as a little kid when I heard it and saw it for the first time. It was just a fantastic little throwback. But yes, it's just like a huge if you added to the franchise. And it's a big franchise as it is. So I've mentioned this before. I've always teased that I've always wanted to do a Why I Love Sequels article on the site. And one of the reasons I do is because you get so much history to work with, and you can play with that as you see fit. And it's a great thing if you're a fan, and if you're smart, you can still do it for people who are new to the franchise, and they can still kind of enjoy it and get a smile out of it, and maybe get them curious about the stuff. So yeah, huge, 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 huge recommend from me. I mean, if you own a Wii U, it's a no-brainer. If you don't own a Wii U, I'm not going to tell you to buy a $300 system for one game. but I do think that it should be one of the games on. It should be the game at the top of the list if you ever do invest into the system at some point.
It's at the top of my list.
Yeah, it should be. And I mean, I like New Super Mario Bros. U, and I like New Super Mario U for the most part. But this is kind of the game that shows, like, yeah, you know, like, Mario isn't the still stagnant franchise that a lot of people accuse the New Super Mario Bros. Franchise of being. And it's really weird to think about, because I can't really think of any other series. And granted, none of them have been around this long. But there are right now three very distinct styles of Mario platformers on the market. Three very radical different takes on the formula that all are core Mario games, but are very different in their approach to what they do, but all very similar in certain regards.
I think you could look, you're trying to say that you can't think of another example of another series doing something like that. I think actually Nintendo's own house, you could say that to maybe a lesser degree, but Zelda and Metroid both kind of have multiple prongs.
They have multiple prongs. I think Zelda and Metroid only have two, though. Because, I mean, Metroid is either the Prime style or the 2D style.
And Other M.
Other M was kind of it was kind of trying to do the 2D style in a 3D space.
Well,
like, if Other M worked, and I like Other M, but if Other M worked, I could see it. I would say it's a third prong. I don't see them returning to that formula because it was kind of so bashed therapy, and I really think it would have helped if they'd given you full analog controls in that game. Zelda, I guess I could see it, especially with the handheld ones, because it's the 2D and the 3D ones, but even the 2D ones on that, like, they have, like, the semi-2, you know, like, the overhead ones, and then they have, like, the pure 2D ones. Granted, they haven't returned to a Zelda's 2 from it in a long time. But, yeah, there are a lot of distinct styles in that, and it's really nice. You know, it's one of the things that I think it's one of the things they've always done a really good job at. And as much as I love 3D World and I love the Galaxy games and I love the new Super Mario Bros. U, I really, 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 really do hope this is the last we see of a Mario cast for some time. I've been blessed with, like, 5 great games in 4 years, but I think that's way too many, and at least the core platformer franchise should go on the bench for a bit. Anyhow, I also started The Legend of Zelda: Link Between Worlds, and if you've played any of the console Zelda games in recent years, this is a really rapid departure from this. This game pace is brisk. I think I'm already through, like, 5 dungeons in the game, and I've been playing for, like, 4 hours or something like that. Like, there's, like, no downtime between missions. It's like, oh, I come back from a dungeon. Oh, the other dungeon's open. I can just go right there. There's not a lot of story in between that. You can tackle them in pretty much any order, which I didn't realize because the game never triggers, like, oh, you can do anything in any order now. It's kind of like, oh, here's a bunch of dungeons. I just picked the one that was nearest to me, and then I found out that wasn't the one people did more often than their first one. And then I went to for another dungeon, and I lost my way, so I ended up in a third dungeon that I didn't want to go to, but it was a, anyhow, really great system. In order for them to accomplish that, though, they have a rent-to system, and I think the rent-to system could have gone either way, but I think they were smart enough, and they usually are with their game design, to kind of build the game around it. So there's a fast travel system in this game, and usually there's a fast travel point anywhere near the start of a dungeon and the house you need to go to. So, like, if you get to an area and you don't have the weapon, you usually don't know what item you're going to need for what dungeon until you get there. You usually have a spot you can travel to and from, so it's not like, oh, I have to go all the way back to the house to rent this item. It's, oh, okay, I can go here and I can, no, I need this item, so I'll go back, and it's like 50 rupees to rent an item. And if you die, everything you've rented is taken away from you, which does bring higher stakes to deaths in the game, and why I keep a bottled fairy with me at all times. You can also purchase them, but purchasing them is a lot more expensive. I've purchased 3 items. I purchased the Zelda staples, I purchased the boomerang, I purchased the arrow, and purchased items are permanent, so even if you die, they don't take it away from you. And I think the first item you get is half off. I paid like 800 rupees for it. The second one was 1,200 rupees. And I think the last one was just 1,000 rupees.
What's your favorite item so far?
My favorite item so far, I've always been a sticker for the arrow, which is really neat that you get it early in this game. It's one of the first ones you get. Oh, one of the first ones I got.
Oh, nice. You don't have to deal with a slingshot first, like in every other Zelda game.
No, like you can pretty much, like you can honestly just go to the store and rent every item at once, and you're good to go. You can have the sand rod. I'm not far enough in the game. I do know this much from listening to people that not every item you get is purchasable. Like some of the items you actually do get through dungeons and missions and stuff like that. And I've actually gotten a couple that case up, like the bracelets he uses to pick up boulders and rocks and stuff is something you get during a dungeon or you get from a side mission. So not everything is from that, but you can go to the store and pretty much pick up every item and be set to go. My one criticism with that, not necessarily with the item system, well, I guess with the item system, but not how they do it, is that the fact that you can only use one item at a time, which I thought was kind of, especially from coming from the 3D Zelda games, where you can usually use two or three at a time. I think Skyward Sword allowed you to use four. No, Skyward Sword allowed you to use one, but you had a very quick interface. There's really no quick way about it. You have to go into the item menus. Granted, it's a touchscreen, so it's like two times.
Yeah, I was going to say, even with it's a touchscreen, though, so it should be pretty...
Yeah, but it's still kind of like, it still kind of sucks, because I want to be able to use, like, I want to be able to have, like, an ice rod and have my arrows with me as well, instead of, like, okay, I need to freeze this, and then I need to switch over to the arrows, so I can shoot that guy over there, and then I can continue the game. Like, again, it's a minor pet peeve, but it does kind of add up, and there are enough buttons on the 3DS where they could have used it in a manner where you could have had more than one item at a time. That said, the major hook of this game, the major gimmick, as they would say, is the ability to kind of go into 2D, into the walls. And I really thought that was just going to be this really stupid thing, but it actually turns out to be a really engaging part of it. Like, it's something that I had to rework my brain as far as the Zelda game goes, because a lot of times I'll come to an area and I'm like, I have no idea how to progress, and I'm like, oh, of course, I can just turn into a wall, I'll walk across this edge, I can get on this button, and then this puzzle, you know, then I can continue to puzzle and stuff like that. So it's kind of thinking in a third space, in as far as top-down and then a 2D plane as well. The other thing that's kind of cool about that, and this is with the system, I'm really kind of curious to hear people's impressions of the 2DS, is this game makes great use of 3D, because it uses kind of a layered plane, so like as you go up, stuff kind of, you can see stuff in the background that's different levels and stuff like that. And kind of like 3D and it plays with that dimensions by, you know, like if it's in 2D, sometimes it's hard to tell that things are on different levels. And once you do it in 3D, you can see, like, okay, this is a different plane than this one, so I need to go up an extra floor to make progress that I didn't know existed until then. And it's a really cool effect. It's one of the, I think I mentioned this with 3D Land, and I think Luigi's Mansion were two big ones that I played pretty much in 3D the entire time just because the game benefited so much from it. And this is another one. And, you know, once again, and this is kind of getting old hat, I said this is 3D World as well. The music in this game is fantastic. A lot of it is kind of throwbacks to A Link to the Past, because this game does pay a huge homage, so it is a sequel. But a lot of it is original and fun, and it really fits the environment. So, yeah, if you have a 3DS, I would also recommend A Link to the Past, which is also working its way up my Game of the Year list.
Yeah, A Link Between Worlds.
A Link Between Worlds, yes, there we go. I will say this much, Nintendo's terrible at naming things. I really don't like A Link Between Worlds, even though A Link to the Past is actually... A Link to the Past doesn't make sense at all. A Link to the Past would have made more sense for Ocarina of Time. But yeah. What about you, Jason? What have you been playing?
Well, being as it is Thanksgiving week in the States, like you mentioned, been spending a lot of time playing games. Been continuing with Need for Speed Rivals, which I talked about last week. Not too much new I want to share, other than when you get up to the later cars, the faster supercars, man, the sense of speed in this game is just unreal. And it's almost like serene, just flying through hairpin after hairpin, like getting the perfect drift on, you know, just making it through a hot pursuit event with a sliver of your health left. Like, this game is just really fun. It still makes me miss, like, what could have been if they didn't make it just, like, you know, peer-to-peer six players. Like, if they had a real server and had, like, you know, hundreds of players or even like, you know, 64 players like Battlefield or something, I think that's probably the direction they're going to be taking this in the future. But, and also I forgot to mention last week, I believe this is the first Need for Speed game with Ferraris in it since the original, or not the original, but since Hot Pursuit 2 on the PS2 / GameCube Xbox. So being a Ferrari lover, that's pretty cool. Welcome back. Other than that, I got my hands on GTA 5 this week finally. For some context, I'm someone who's never really enjoyed a GTA game, or I've never finished one. And it's one of those series that I can appreciate what they do, but more than like it appeals to me on a personal level or a personal taste. That being said, I've really enjoyed every Rockstar game since 4. So I, of course, decided to give GTA 5 a shot again, and so far it's been really good. I mean, one thing that stands out a lot is just how well it's written and how good the voice acting is, and especially considering Rockstar North is in London, I think, or somewhere
Scotland.
In those... Scotland, okay, yeah. British Isles, same thing. But, man, they really nail the kind of, like, subtle idiosyncrasies of, like, different subcultures in the U.S. and in, like, L.A. in general, or Los Santos in this game. And as someone who, you know, lives in Southern California, spends a lot of time every year in L.A., it's really, really cool to see their kind of recreation of that area. It's something I think, you know, I'm not as familiar with New York, like in Liberty City, so it's just, I'm sure, Earl, you had this kind of same feeling playing in Liberty City, but, or GTA 4.
Yes, yeah, GTA 4 more so. But yeah, it's a nice thing. It does kind of wear off after the first or second time, but it is cool.
Yeah, it's just, it's cool to be, you know, driving through areas that I recognize, like, there's where E3 is, or there's where I was drunk at UCLA one weekend in college, or, you know, like, things like that. It's just it's cool. As for the game itself, I'm still fairly early on. I just yesterday unlocked the ability to switch between the three characters at will. So far, my early to this point impressions are the shooting is so improved. They clearly took a lot of lessons they learned from Red Dead Redemption and from Max Payne. Sometimes it's still a little... the aiming's a little loose at times, but there's a little bit of a lock-on that helps. The driving... I don't know if this is just because I'm also playing Need for Speed Rivals at the same time, but I hate it. It's so slippery. I'm constantly fishtailing, especially in the stronger cars. I do like the bikes a lot. The bikes are really fun. One thing GTA has always done well is scale, right? I mean, from huge levels and everything, and 5 kind of turns that up to another degree. Like, every car you can get, and there's tons and tons and tons of cars, it's customizable. Every gun you get is customizable. It's like, they're like, oh, what's all the stuff they did in all these other games? Like, all these car games, you can, you know, customize the engines, the brake, you know, all those things you can customize in car games, you can customize in GTA. All the things, like in Call of Duty, you can customize about guns, you can customize the guns in GTA. You can, you know, get tattoos and haircuts and clothes, like everything, they just threw the kitchen sink out with this game and let you do pretty much whatever you want. And of course the overworld or map itself is just humongous. And the number of different vehicles, I mean, my God, from like all the different like parodies of licensed cars to even just like planes and helicopters. And I've only briefly been exposed to the underwater section of the game, which is just a whole nother crazy amount of scale. So, it's kind of too early for me to tell if this will be the first GTA that I like and play to completion, but, you know, early signs are pretty good, and I'm having a blast.
Yeah, and according to Daniel, it is much better than 4, which I really didn't like. So, I actually did not pick that up Black Friday because I didn't find a decent enough deal. Like, I know it was like $34, but I wanted it sub 30. Yes, I'm that cheap. So, yeah,
this, there's a crazy amount of game in here for $30.
I don't think any GTA game has ever been denied on content. The difference is just because you have
True.
Content doesn't mean it's engaging content. And I think that's always where it kind
Actually,
of goes.
Actually, I think GTA 5 has kind of solved that as well, because I was Like, I completed the... Once I completed the game, I admit I hadn't played it much, but I did... I was like, oh, there's a tennis minigame at Michael's house. Let's go and see what that's about. And you get to play tennis with Michael. And it's actually... surprisingly, in, like, engrossed... Whereas most games are like, oh, fuck the tennis, you know? One minigame I did hate was yoga. And Jason, eventually the game makes you do yoga, and it's awful. It's so bad. I don't know why, like, play the game such an obsession with yoga.
They make you making fun horrible. Of the yoga in the beginning.
Yeah, and then yoga's kind of a running thing that almost everybody talks about. It's very strange.
I think it's because it's kind of a big part of, like, the L.A. Culture.
Probably.
So it's something they wanted to play into the game.
Okay. So anything else we've been playing this past week?
I mentioned last week that I bought Pokemon Black 2, and I know I'm a year late on this, but I bought it because I wanted to fill out the Pokedex for Hicks. And I'm surprisingly, like, I didn't like Black 1, I was kind of brought back around with Black 2. The story is much more interesting because you see. So, I don't think anybody's going to care if I spoil this, but if you do care,
no, you're good.
That's Pokemon Black game. So, obviously, at the end of Pokemon Black, you beat Team Plasma and stuff. And then for Black 2, they come back, and you get to see how the events of Black 1 sort of affected people. And there's this cool thing where if you link Black 2 up to Black 1, you get to see, like, different memories from people about things that happened. And, like, a couple of gym leaders are not gym leaders anymore, and you get to see why. And, like, it's really cool to see that they finally made a Pokemon world with people that seem to actually live in it, instead of just people that stand there at the back of a building waiting for you to challenge them. It's very strange.
No, no, they challenge you. Well, you never challenge them.
You have to go to them, though. So
no, you don't. They have this huge radius where they can see you from halfway across the room.
No, I'm talking about gym leaders.
Oh, okay.
So, you know, instead of them being just people that just stand there forever, like... Because, what is it? There's one gym... One of the gyms is run by three people, and they, like, towards the end of Black 1... A whole bunch of the gym leaders get together to help you out, and those three people are not there, and you get to see that they ended up realizing that they're not as, like, well entwined with each other as they thought they were. So they end up taking a break from being gym leaders. And I'm like, this is cool. Why haven't you done this again, Game Freak? You know, because there's so much better. Like, the story was so much better in Black and Black 2 combined compared to everything else. I'm just surprised they didn't. They just went straight back to a one-dimensional story with X and Y.
It's really interesting this is like the first actual Pokemon sequel, right? Like, the rest have been kind of like Final Fantasy almost, where they're all kind of independent of each other and share, obviously, systems and themes and stuff, but...
Yeah, it's nice to see, like, the world has moved on slightly. Like, there's a bit in Black 1 that you see was a building site, and it's not a building site anymore. There are actually buildings there, and it's... really cool.
I was going to say, didn't Red and Blue and Gold and Silver kind of have that, like, this is a sequel?
Well, Red and Blue and Gold and Silver kind of had that, but you didn't have the same characters turn up? Like,
You did a little bit in the second part of the game where you go back to Kanto, but, like, they're not really, it's not significant, they're not changed, really.
Whereas in Black 2, you see, like, I mean, it was kind of confusing for me, because I named the character in, my character in Black 2 the same as I named it in Black 1, but they talk about the character, the main character from Black 1, and what it is that they did, and how they managed to convince people of certain things. And
so does it track that save data from Black 1?
It does if you have a copy and you link it, yeah.
Cool.
Which is really cool. Whereas otherwise they would probably just refer to the character as a trainer, whereas if you actually link your game, it refers to that character, that person by name. And that's obviously what you called it. And it's just really cool to see, like, Team Plasma's, like, being fractured into two, and there's now two sides at war with each other. You know, there are gym leaders that are not gym leaders anymore, and they have their own different lives, and they're doing different things. You know, there are people that think differently to how they used to, and it's really cool to see that. And I hope the Game Freak does more of that stuff, because that is really cool. I mean, somebody said to me, oh, why are you complaining about a story in a Pokemon game? Well, just because they haven't been known for having good stories, it doesn't mean you can't have a good story in them.
Now, I was about to say, I feel like with X and Y were kind of like a sports game on a new system, and that they kind of go back to the basics before they flesh it out with the
Yeah, maybe.
A lot of that work, I imagine, would have to be getting 760-some-odd models into 3D and giving them all unique animations. So everything else probably took a back seat.
Maybe. I mean, I hope to see good things from the from the future. In the future.
Yeah, I'm... So, yeah, I'm curious about that. So that's everything we've been playing this week, or...
I haven't been playing anything else, really.
I've been playing just Battlefield 4 some more. They finally patched it. Still crashes occasionally. This is on PS4, but... Ugh. But it's fun when it works. It's really fun when it works.
It's not a positive impression of the game.
It's more like not a positive impression of it as a product. The game itself is very good.
How is the evolution?
You know, funny enough, like, I haven't seen too much of that. The only
From
one
I've
really
been
seen
told,
is a skyscraper falling down and, like, you have to fight through the rubble and stuff.
From what I've been told, it got to a point in the beta where people were like, no, don't collapse the building, because the game's just not as, the map's not as good if you do that.
For that particular one, I agree. Like, the rubble's kind of a pain in the ass to climb through, because there's all these, you know, little, obviously, pieces of rubble sticking out, and, like, your character gets stuck on them a lot.
It just seems like, it sounds like, well, they did, they just put it in as the gimmick. Oh, we promise this isn't the same game, guys. Please buy it again. You know.
Yeah, I still think the concept is really cool. And, again, I haven't seen too much of it in the other levels. I don't know if it's just people don't know how to trigger it. I mean, I don't. But, you know, like, I wouldn't be surprised if the execution doesn't match the concept right now.
Not to be expected. Okay, really quick before we kind of transition into our game leader recap stuff. I've been asking this question, and part of it is because I am putting up a feature this week on the site, hopefully. But when it comes to Santa Claus, and I realize this is an odd way to start a question, what do you think is more important to him, intentions or action?
Well, the saying goes, the road to hell is paved with good intentions.
And that was my defense as well. But some people are like, intentions should be as important. And the reason I'm putting this, I'm asking this, and the reason I'll ask another question in a bit, is I'm putting together a list of naughty and nice characters for 2013. And I was curious as to what are some video game characters you would think would be on nice or naughty list this year.
I guess it depends on really both at the same time.
So what you're saying is, although Nathan Drake has the best of intentions because he's mowing down hundreds of people over the course of a story, that he would be on the naughty list?
That's exactly what I'm asking, because a lot of this does come down to murder, and what is the motivation for the murder? Like, in some cases, Drake is murdering in defense. Some cases, he's just murdering for greed, because they are in front of him. They are an obstacle he needs to get rid of.
Are there many characters who could go on the nice list?
Well, that's what I'm asking. I mean, there are some. Like, I would put Luigi, because this is his year. But also because in Luigi's Mansion, you don't technically kill the ghost. You contain them.
Right.
And he is trying to help do research, even if it's against his better nature, because he is afraid. That is a nice behavior. I haven't played The Last of Us, but I assume The Last of Us in Bioshock Infinite to a certain degree.
Well,
kind of shooter trait where you're doing your actions to protect the female protagonist.
Yeah, the Last of Us kind of embraces the gravity of what you do, though. Like, there's no delusions, like...
You're doing it for good.
No, it's more like, this is just what you have to do to survive, and it's not that it's good at all. In fact, they talk about how, you know, Joel talks about how he's not really a good person, but... He just does what he has to do to survive.
And the problem with this is like, how would it account for games with where you get given choice? For example, in GTA 5, for example, Michael is a character who He's done very bad things, and he knows it. And he just can't help it sometimes. But depending on how you play the game, you can make up for that in terms, like, in regards to Michael's family, or you could just not if you don't want to.
Well, again, like I said, it's intention versus actions. I also do think, and, you know, this is harder to do with a kind of a newish character, but I also think if a character's kind of going through a road to redemption for their past deeds, that might help. Like, you could be a terrible character last year, but if you're helping improve your situation this year, that should put you on a nice list if your actions and intentions are more of a positive gain, even if it's against, you know, necessary doing everything right and by the books. Like, I imagine Santa Claus doesn't expect everybody to be by the books, but I do think that your actions and intentions need to kind of be in line. Like, you can have great intentions with terrible actions or great actions with bad intentions. Yes, and this is an actual serious discussion I've been having all day with my friend as we try to put together this gist of Naughty or Nice. I don't know if we have any other video game characters on this other than we... Oh, I also put Wonder Red from Wonderful 101 because he's kind of that noble hero from, like, most animes who spy the books and wants to do everything right because he wants to help the reputation of his father. And I feel like killing aliens doesn't count as a negative thing.
I think, is it from this year only?
I'm trying to stick to 2013 mostly. As far as, like, them doing stuff in 2013, why? What did you have in mind?
Mm-hmm. Well, I was going to say, and I don't know how much this just depends on the way I played it or if it's a general thing, but I was going to say Lee from The Walking Dead.
That's a good one. I think, and then I think this goes back to Daniel's point about choice, because a lot of decisions
could
be seen as selfish, but a lot of them are kind of done for the greater good. And... yeah, I mean, a case could be made for that, and we could kind of do that, because I think The Walking Dead had a complete collection come out this year, or is out soon, so we can kind of...
Yeah, and I think kind of in the same vein, the Big Bad Wolf from The Wolf Among Us is kind of, actually, you know, kind of a similar character, like a character with a dark past, you know, kind of like Lee or like Michael in GTA, but is doing good in the present of the game.
I would be against that partially because, as far as I know, The Wolf Among Us only has one episode out. Like, you don't know what's going to happen over the course of the next four episodes or so. Like, maybe they just turn him into this evil creature who makes all bad decisions. So, look out for that. It's sometime this week on the website. I think it's going up Tuesday or Thursday because technically... December 4th is Santa Claus's Naughty or Nice Just Day, according to this weird calendar I checked out. So I figured it would be a very nice and novel idea to kind of do a one-off thing on that. That said, welcome once again to our Game of the Year retrospective. This week we are covering January through March of 2013, and that was one hell of a period for gaming this year. As always, just to kind of speed up the process, we're mostly going to do games that have a possibility of even being considered a Game of the Year contender. Like, there are a couple, there's a ton of games that come out, but is anybody going to recommend Earth Defense Force 2017?
Well, no, because that came out on the Vita, and it's a port of a game that's very old anyway,
okay.
So...
But yeah,
know.
I mean, okay, what about Ace Combat? Well, you get my idea.
Yeah.
Skulls of the Shogun. There we go. Some of the games that came out in January that we can just kind of speed through. Anarchy Reigns, I don't think it's going to go on anybody's list.
I completely forgot that game existed.
There you go. And we'll get to that a lot during the middle months with stuff like Remember Me and Fuse. And actually, I think Fuse is out in this period as well. DMC Devil May Cry.
I haven't played it. But from what I've seen, it is very good, and, you know, I'm not a person that plays Devil May Cry games, so I don't get why people hated it.
Because it was different.
I guess.
I think that's really what I got, and it's another game on this list. I feel like it got the same reputation as Metal Gear Rising Revengeance, which was different from Metal Gear games, so people kind of had it out for it because that's not the type of game they want to see. They want to see a return to the old school Dante.
But Metal Gear Rising was so much fun, and it didn't try to be. It was like an intentional offshoot, you know.
Yeah, but people didn't like that because it still used the Metal Gear name.
Well, with all due respect, those people can go shove it.
Well, I think the Metal Gear games do a good enough job with the stories of ruining that game's name, but neither here nor there. But yeah, I think Metal Gear Solid Rising, Metal Gear Rising Revengeance, they were smart enough to even get rid of the gear so people knew it wasn't like an official game in that franchise.
Yeah.
Another one I think has a possibility. I think Platinum was a pretty decent studio this year. yeah, so there's that. Another one that I think, I don't know if it's going to be on a lot of people's list. I know it was a huge game at the start of the year, was Fire Emblem Awakening, which
I just don't that's a big time contender for my list.
There you go. I really need to open my copy.
It took me several months. I bought it when it was on sale, I want to say in June, before I went on a camping trip. Ended up not playing it during that camping trip, and then just never played it for like until about a month ago when I finished Pokemon. I finally was like, well, I want to play another 3DS game. Let's start Fire Emblem.
That's kind of, I haven't finished Pokemon, but I took it out for Into the Past, and I in between worlds, and I'm like, I gotta finish Into Between Worlds, and I'm going back to Pokemon. And then it's like, then I don't know when this is gonna come in, but from what I've seen, and the demo, which is what sold me on the game, is really fun, so. And I played, I think I got into Fire Emblem, I mentioned at the start of the year, with like Sacred Realms, which was one of the best of the games, so it seems like a very fun game. It's very different. I don't want to say it's very different for Nintendo, but it is kind of different for one of their big games. Even though it's a franchise that they've had for like 20 years.
Especially considering its counterpart, Advance Wars, wasn't there. They didn't publicize that a whole lot when they were making those games either, so.
Well, I think they publicized them as much as they expected them to sell, and I think this one got a huge push. And it actually sold remarkably well for what it is throughout the early part. But yeah, high rated game, a lot of people love it. So yeah, I guess. Dead Space 3.
That game is crap. That game does not. I do not like Dead Space 3. I spent more time laughing at Dead Space 3 than actually being tense or me being scared or anything, because it's just you get an SMG and you shoot at things. That's all that game is. I don't know. And that's not counting the fucking the massive co-op problems I had trying to play it online as well. Ridiculous.
Okay, so Dead Space 3 would not be on our list.
No.
Cycoop with Thieves in Time. Don't all speak at once. Okay, that won't be on our list.
I don't think any of us played it.
No, I don't think so either, which is a shame. Yeah, whatever. Crisis 3.
I know, I looked at that and I was like, oh, I already own Crisis 2. Why would I buy it again?
I just remember for the commercial, nothing like a sharp-dressed man.
Yeah.
Okay, so there's that. Metal Gear, we already mentioned Metal Gear Rising Revengeance. Anything else you folks want to add to that?
I intend on buying it when it comes out on PC, if it comes out on PC at this rate.
There are sections of that game that I loathe. The final boss definitely comes to mind. And one of the other bosses. But overall, I love how silly it is. In fact, I was reading a retrospective on Time Splitters 2 this morning. Just talking about how, like, the ways in which it was goofy. And how the FPS genre's kind of lost that. And Revengeance reminds me a lot of that. In the way that it embraces its goofy attitude. Like, at one point, he's wearing, like, a poncho. Just because he's like, oh, I'm in Mexico, I need to fit in. And it's so ridiculous. And like, the people there just laugh at him, like, what are you doing? But it's, like, I don't know, just all the stupid stuff that's, like, really funny. And it has a really, really solid melee combat mechanics, like, underneath. And the whole, like, hook where you can, like, you build up your meter and you can slow down time and, you know, use the right stick to, you know, chop anything in any fine direction that you want, like, works really well. So I really enjoyed that game.
So it's going to be brought up in discussion, at least for this part. Then the rest of February is kind of dry. March was a bit better overall, I think. Castlevania Lords of Shadows, Mirror of Fate, which also, I guess, we can talk about the HD version here as well. That came out for Halloween, I believe.
I played the demo and I was just like, I don't like this. I just didn't feel it. Just did not feel right at all.
It felt so chunky.
Yeah. And it doesn't feel like it's precise like Castlevania should.
You know, I find a lot of 2.5D games to fall under that description, too. It's kind of a pitfall of that style.
Yeah.
Not all of them, obviously, but many.
I think it's something that's really hard to design for if you don't know how to do it. And, you know, not everybody's... But it's just, I think part of it is also just limitations of the 3DS hardware, because they seem to have went for a more graphically intensive game, and that really just kind of makes it slow and chunky and not as fun. They should have went with, like, a straight-up 2D game. And maybe hand-drawn, I think, you know, like, the 3DS can output some pretty games. We've seen Resident Evil Revelation, stuff like that, but I think 2D sprites or hand-drawn stuff seems to be better suited for the device. So yeah, there's that. This is always like a contender. I don't think any of us actually played it though. MLB The Show.
I did play it. I would not say it's a contender nor any sports game, but
we've had this discussion before, haven't we? Yeah. Okay, so moving on. I'm sure this is a contender, or at least it was at the start of the year. Tomb Raider.
Yes.
I don't know, I liked Tomb Raider, it just didn't scream anything special to me.
I loved Tomb Raider. It's definitely one of my favorite games this year, and one of my favorite games of the entire generation. I don't know, like, because you're going to ask me why, and it's, I don't know if there's any one thing that really stands out. I just thought it was a really well put together package, and heavily scripted, yes, but I thought it worked really well.
I can't even recall one section from that game. Like, I don't know. I liked it, but it's not. There's nothing that stood out.
The one thing that stood out to me from what I've played, I haven't finished it yet. The one thing, and I hope there's more, and I hope they become better, or long, I should say, were like kind of the tombs, like the little hidden tombs that were just like one giant puzzle.
That's funny that you say that, because that was probably the most forgettable aspect of the game to me.
Really? I thought like I said, I'm a huge fan of like Portal and Zelda. I like the little puzzles and trying to figure them out. Like, so far it hasn't been too complex, but that's why I'm hoping they get longer and better as I go on.
They don't get longer, and there's only five in total.
Yeah.
Sorry.
So that, I think that's why for me, because I expected them to be, because when I first dropped into one, it reminded me of, if you guys played Assassin's Creed 2, Ezio would find similar tombs, and they'd be these good, like, half-hour levels that are all just puzzles and, you know, traversal, and using the combination to get to a certain area and get whatever secret was in that tomb. So I was expecting Tomb Raiders to be, you know, the same thing, and while they are clever puzzles, each tomb is one puzzle, and that's it. And it takes you know, a couple minutes, and that's it. Or like, you know,
here's,
maybe 5 or 10
minutes.
Here's
something that I read an article, and this was a very good point that they brought up, was if you find a secret like artifact, you can turn it round and you can zoom in and zoom out, and sometimes Lara sort of comments on like a certain aspect of it. Whereas when you finish the tombs, you just get this generic ass cutscene where she opens a chest, like, pull something out of it and closes why don't you show me what's in the chest? You're showing me other collectibles and you're giving me details about them. Why aren't you doing it for the tombs, which is supposed to be, A, the whole point of the game because it's called Tomb Raider, you know, and B, special because they have their own little rooms. I don't know.
Yeah, I'm a little disappointed, Dan. I really was hoping that those were just kind of the intro ones, and as you got on, it became more and more, you know, like, it became more, not essential, because these are like side areas you have to find, but that's part of the appeal. It's like, oh, there's a tomb nearby, how do I get here? And then you gotta figure out this puzzle to get this prize, but if it's just kind of these one-off rooms that take 5 minutes to complete, then that's disappointing.
There were big missed opportunities.
The one thing I'll say about those rooms is, there's one in particular I'm thinking of, and I think this applies to multiple of them, but I like that the puzzles are physics puzzles, kind of like, they reminded me of Half-Life 2 a lot, which is always, you know, really impressive, I think, when that's pulled off properly, but... But the game itself, I mean, I liked everything. I liked the setting of this island with its mysteries. I'm also a big Lost fan. I don't know, maybe that was a callback for me. I liked this new version of Laura where she kind of finds herself along the way. And I think, you know, maybe her being vulnerable in the beginning kind of is overplayed and people are like, well, now she's just mowing down people with her assault rifle. Like, I didn't really have a big disconnect with that. To me, it was like she had a progression and, yeah, eventually she's just like this, you know, Nathan Drake action hero. But, like, she does have to get there. She doesn't start like that. And I think it's impressive what, you know, or, like, that she has that kind of progression. And then once it does get to the part where, you know, straight-up action game, I thought the mechanics worked really well. And I loved every bit of the game that was climbing on things or running away from things that are exploding and falling on you and stuff like that. Like, I just loved it.
So you have the Indiana Jones parts of the game.
Yes, Indiana Jones is a great analogy, and it nails that aspect, in my opinion.
So one of the greatest action sequences of a movie is that boat, the chase at the start.
And there's this one scene that's probably my favorite, like, quote-unquote escape sequence in a game where you're, like, you're running down this wooden structure on this mountain and it's, like, crumbling and you have to jump all these gaps and this piece of a plane comes and crashes into it and it knocks you off and then you're sliding. You know, it's just, it's really awesome. I really like that game.
Okay. Speaking of games with missed opportunities, we had both God of War Ascension and Gears of War Judgment come out in March.
I think the two poster childs for this generation is starting to get long in the tooth.
More like the poster child of crap. We have an extra year to go. Let's just turn out this crap. People are going to buy because it has names on it. But yeah.
You know what? I was thinking about buying Gears of War Judgment until somebody told me that they took out Down But Not Out, and I was like, okay then, forget it. Like, that's like the staple thing of Gears of War, and you just take it out. What?
Judgment is not a good game by almost any means. I mean, and it's really disappointing because you know, it was made by People Can Fly, and they did Bulletstorm before that, and Bulletstorm was a fantastic game.
Well, and before that, they made Painkiller, and that was fantastic as well.
Yeah.
So.
And the Gears of War, you know, the mainline series is also a fantastic series, so I don't know. You know, just I guess the changes they made just did not work because I did not enjoy that game,
yeah.
You know, very much at all. Ascension, on the other hand, I didn't think it was a bad game. It's just it doesn't live up to any single one of its predecessors, not a single one, including the PSP games. And like it's got solid mechanics. You know, it has some cool boss fights. It's got some parts that are like, you know, oh, look at the scale. But it's inferior to God of War 3, especially in every single way. So it's, I don't know. And I thought, you know, and plus, you know, the pitch was kind of like, oh, we're going to go into this earlier version of Kratos. He's going to be more human. We're going to have more of a focus on story. And you start the game, and A, he's the same angry, revenge-driven Kratos that he's always been. And B, they try to do this, like, time-shifting narrative where it goes back and forth between present and past, and it just does not work, the least of which because your abilities don't change. Your abilities are on their own progression from the story itself. And I thought it would have been really interesting if they went back and God of War 1 spoilers, but get over it, that game's 9 years old. If they went back to when he was actually a Spartan general and you played with like a Spartan army, you know, with spear and shield, you played the sequence where he makes his plea for Ares to save him and then becomes the Ghost of Sparta. Like, why not do that? And then, you know, kills his family and stuff. That would have been a great story. That would have had some emotion to it, and that would have allowed for a lot of new game mechanics. Instead, we get a game that's entirely disposable, that does not tie into any of the other games in the series. And again, isn't bad, per se, but doesn't live up to its pedigree.
Okay, and yeah, I think that was, I think at the end of the day, that conclusion could have been used for three games this generation, well, this year with God of War Ascension, Gears of War Judgment, and later on Batman Arkham City Origins.
Yep.
So yeah, what else did we have in... Lego City Undercover, which I don't think, I mean, it's not in my top five anymore, I don't think, but I still had a ton of fun with it. It's a game that made me laugh, and I think it's probably one of the best games to make use of, like, movie homages and kind of turning them into, and I'm really sure I mispronounced homage, whatever there, but it turns it into an actual, it turns it into an actual game play mechanic that makes sense in the context of the game without being too on the nose. And it just kind of ramps up the craziness. By the time you get to the end, it just has a fantastically fun, like, final 2 and 3 hours. I mentioned when we talked about this early in the year, one of my core problems with it is the fact that it just isn't, like, the combat itself isn't that engaging. It's really just one button. But the game never really demands much of you as far as the combat. It's not like it's something it throws at you all the time. And the other thing is, it's more of a kind of puzzle open. But it's a ton of fun. If you can find it for cheap, I really do recommend checking it out. No idea if it's going to MIS, though. Monster Hunter 3 Ultimate.
I can see why Monster Hunter fans like it. I'm not a fan of it, personally. But, yeah. I know I'm going to be playing a lot of it soon, because two of my housemates got 3DSs and a copy of the game, so they're going to rope me into playing it with them at some point.
Wasn't that the point of the game?
You'd have think so, but they didn't. I would have played it online if they would have put online into the 3DS version.
And you'd have no reason to buy the Wii U version.
Yeah, but I don't want. Well, it's not getting me to buy the Wii U version, because, I would have bought one by now. I'm not a Monster Hunter fan, so.
No. Yeah, it's one of those games, and I understand the point of it, and Martin's going to kill us if he hears this episode, but I just hate the notion that it's a game that you have to kind of work to get into. Like, it's not something you can kind of pick up and play. It's not even something you can get over a course of a couple of hours. It's something you have to invest a lot of time into to really kind of get anywhere good. And like I said, if Martin hears this, I'm sure he's going to scream at me for saying this. He had this huge spiel about wanting to write an article about how he hates when people say that. The same thing with the Dark Souls and Demon Souls games. But yeah, Monster Hunter 3 Ultimate. I mean, technically speaking, Monster Hunter 3 Ultimate wouldn't count for our Game of the Year either way, because it's a port, even if it's an enhanced port of a, not even a Wii game, I believe it's an advanced port of a PSP game that got upported to the Wii, then got downported to the 3DS, which got upported to the Wii U. And in no way is that confusing. We just mentioned Dark Moon.
I would say, Pokemon might change this, but perhaps my favorite game on the 3DS. And me and Earl have had an argument many times on whether Luigi's Mansion or Super Mario 3D Land is the better game. I think we'll both agree they're both fantastic games.
Yes, they're both fantastic games. And this improved on the original Luigi's Mansion in every regard.
Oh man, it was so awesome. Like, I love the whimsy in it. I love, just everything. Like, it has so much charm. And the mechanics are so tight. Like,
and the music is great.
Oh, the music is great. Like, my brother still hums the theme song sometimes. He didn't even play it. He was just watching me play. Yeah.
I also love the fact that he has it as his ringtone.
Yeah. And his phone is like a DS. And, I don't know. There's really only one thing I didn't like about the game, and that you couldn't save during the level, and the levels take like half an hour.
Yeah, that was really an odd design decision for a handheld title. It's one of the ones that Nintendo usually doesn't make. They're usually pretty good at, like, okay, you need to go, you can save here. And granted, you have the ability to close it, but usually they're pretty good at, like, saving it.
And to be fair, like, the 3DS's ability to just go to sleep kind of alleviates that, but to some degree, but it would have been nice to just be able to stop.
Yeah. And this isn't a complaint, but this is one of the areas I feel like the original game did better. It's just I prefer the giant mansion instead of having to kind of like repeating parts of the mansion over and over again to get to a different part to continue the story from there. And again, I kind of get why they did it, like we mentioned with the handheld, you do want to break it up into chunks, but it wasn't broken up into the proper chunks to begin with. I do kind of miss just kind of having like this open world mansion to explore. granted, this is a lot meatier than the original Luigi's Mansion, and, you know, it works out a lot better, but that's one of the few things I actually preferred about the original. And I think finally from this, if I'm missing something, is BioShock Infinite.
I don't know. It's a very, very good question whether this should be included, because I think, like, had you asked us, like, this being a month after it came out, everyone would go, yeah, sure. But now, I don't think so. I'm not sure, because, like, it could have been way better paced. The pacing is really off, and I'm not a fan of the combat.
That's what scared me off about the game so much. It's like everybody, I think people have kind of come around to it where it's kind of in the middle, where people are like, it's a good game, but it's nothing special.
Yeah.
Especially in comparison to the original.
Well, I think it does things that are special, but yeah, I mean, compared to what the original one, BioShock, was, and...
Yeah. But yeah, every time people talk about it, they always talk about it in the context of the story, and then they're like, yeah, but the combat isn't that great. I think somebody's mentioned... I think I remember a review or a podcast saying it's like a 1999 shooter in 2013, like it's combat.
Well, it does have a 1999 mode.
But the difference is 1999 shooters were paced a lot better than BioShock Infinite. Because 1999 shooters, you don't get... I mean, let's take... If we compare BioShock to itself, right? We've got BioShock Infinite with just the handyman, right? When you compare it to BioShock 1 with the Big Daddies, you know, when there was a Big Daddy in a level, you could hear it and you could see it, and you knew there was one around, and you could approach it whenever you were ready. The game gave you loads of time and just said to you, look, just make sure you're ready. We'll give you time, we'll give you the stuff, and you can approach it pretty much how you want. Whereas the handyman, it just sort of sprung one on you, and it's like, okay, I need to find the thing that will kill this as fast as possible, because these things are just not fun to fight. Whereas, you know, and I remember the best thing about buying the season pass, I mean, up before Burial at Sea came out, was the fact that it gave me a hat or something that let me do twice as much damage to a handyman, and I was like, thank God for that! That means that they won't be so much of a bitch the next time I find one, because, you know, they just take bullets, and they take more bullets. They eat bullets for breakfast. It's like, oh my God.
Yeah, I didn't find the handyman very enjoyable either. I thought the songbird was kind of a wasted opportunity. I really did not like the ending whatsoever. So, there were things, I mean, and I think, I still contend, like, it's a good game overall, and there's things it does really well, like, just the way they construct the world is really interesting, and some of the, you know, characters, like, Elizabeth is one of my favorite characters of this year, for sure, but, I don't know, I didn't feel like it lived up to its potential, or its pedigree, or, it's good, but it's gonna be a bubble game for my list also.
And it doesn't feel like it took the game 5 years to make. I mean, you look at GTA 5 and it's like, yeah, this game took 5 years to make, I can see it. Whereas BioShock Infinite, it just feels like a game that they had to restart a whole bunch of times because they obviously weren't hitting something that they were going for the first or second or third time around. So I don't think it should be included. It's not...
Well, I mean, it's not what we think should be included, but yeah.
It's not Game of the Year material.
And I think that... I mean, I honestly... Well, we'll go through this just then. Whatever. Like, part of the reason I go through this is part of the reason we do this every year is partially because 12 months is a long time for anything, and when you follow more than one industry, there are a lot of things that do slip through the radar. Like you mentioned, you forgot Anarchy Reigns came out this year. Like, it probably won't win Game of the Year, but who knows, it could win Character of the Year or something like that along the way. And
it was cool because that Bayonetta in it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But, we'll be back next week with our, I guess, April through June, which should be a really short show based on what came out during that time frame. Jason, Daniel, and myself, this has been Dual Worlds, episode 124.
Reminder that an Army of Two game came out this year.
And a reminder that we forgot it.
Oh, yeah! The Devil's Cartel.
We'll catch you next week.
Later, guys.